Good evening. To greet you all in Jesus' name, I want to say that and acknowledge that it's been a real blessing for us already in being here. I remember back some of the first couple times that we were here. It was a tremendous encouragement, tremendous blessing. I suppose there's probably some of you here that come from churches that you might be the only ones that adopted children or did foster care. Or you might have had several that have done it, but for whatever reason, the support, you might not feel like you have the support. Well, I don't feel like we didn't have the support necessarily. We had a lot of well-meaning people, but we didn't just have a lot of people that were walking the journey with us. And so that's what Penn Valley's for, is to come here and just share. And that's what I want to do tonight. And I'm also open for questions if anybody wants to give questions. I don't have a super structured talk or anything here. I'm just going to share a little bit about our experiences and who we are and what we're doing and so forth. So Tom and Christina Pate, we married in 2006 and relatively soon discovered that we aren't having children, at least not, it's not happening. So time moves on. We were asked to go to Team Boys Ranch in Missouri. We were married for 2 years, I think it was, and they asked us to come and be administrators there at a relatively new facility that was there to help teenage, younger and up to teenage boys. And I get there, and most of these boys were adopted. There was maybe a third that weren't adopted. So, you know, I was just going, and we were new in all this, and we were very naive and everything, and come to find out that how many years later that we're walking the same journey that a lot of these people have walked, and that we've tried to minister to and help them through their journey. So, as they say, keep your words sweet, you might have to eat them. I think I have probably done and said plenty of things back in the day. So those that know me better could tell you that's true. So we finally opened our home to foster care. We thought, well, you know, we're going to look for adoption. My wife could give some of these details better than I could, but it's been a while now. In 13, we would have been married about 7 years that we got our foster license. Took a while for that to come through. And I remember we got different calls. Our hopes would go up, and we're like, oh, they have a baby. And, all right, you know, we're like, but it'd fall through, and they'd call back and say, no, they got somebody else. Or they'd tell you that they got you on the list because there's like three families, and you're one of the ones that are qualified. Call you back and say, well, it went to another family. And so we were up and down that. After a bit, it was like, we got a sibling group of four. Can they spend a weekend or a week or something at your house? And, well, that wasn't really what we were thinking about. We were thinking of infants, but through all the roller coaster experiences, I feel like the Lord was preparing us for something. And I remember that just going through those experiences and like, Lord, I think what he wants is just for us to totally trust him. Trust. What does that look like to you? Is totally trust. And so we've tried to do that. Well, that fell through. And time goes on, and after a bit they call us, would you open your home to a 5-year-old autistic boy? Okay, sure. Well, you know, really, that wasn't, again, what we were thinking about, but all right, we'll say sure. So we went and got this child. He was 5 years old. He wasn't potty trained. He wasn't hardly speaking with words. He was eating with his hands mostly, few words, just, yeah. So basically his mom was incompetent. She was in and out of drugs, I think. Or it seems like she had been proven that she was on drugs. So, yeah, we took him in, and he's highly functional. He's not severely autistic. He can learn. It's just that, you know, it takes time and patience. My wife was very good with that. Just probably within, I don't know, half a year, 3 months maybe, shorter than that, he was potty trained, which we're very thankful for. Then 6 weeks into that, they called us and asked us to take his siblings, which was a 1.5-year-old and a 3-month-old at this time. He was 6 weeks old when he went into care. Okay. We'll say yes to that. So we got a sibling group of three, and we had three children to take care of. Time went on. We had him for 3 years in the foster care system, and they finally terminated mom's rights, and then they opened up for adoption. We adopted. So we know the pain of infertility and the pain of the roller coaster ride, the pain of thinking that you're getting something and then it's yanked out of your arm's reaches again. But I think through all that, the Lord has ways of bringing us to himself and helping us to trust him. I think that's really what it was for me, for us. I remember Torin, he's now 12. He was a screamer. He would scream in church, you know, everywhere. So you think about a child, how does a child express its needs? An infant cries and mama comes and takes care of him, takes care of the need, whatever. And the child is satisfied, the child goes to sleep. Well, if that need isn't satisfied, the child works itself up into a frenzy or whatever, and maybe might go to sleep. So I think that's often what happened with our boys, Torin, especially. He was 1.5 years. And a toddler, he was running all over the place. And so neglect, I think, was probably one of the biggest issues in his life. And Keegan, I've always couldn't believe he was 6 weeks old when he went into care. I'm like, why do we have such issues with this child? At a fairly young age, we were like noticing signs of where he'd want to push away his food. You give him dessert, or if we're having dessert, the table is like, do I get any? Or he'd say, not for me. And you'd want to give him some, he'd push it away. It's like, what is this child doing that? You know, we knew that there's obviously some issues, and yeah, we had other issues, just lots of challenges in them learning to trust. And it's there again, that was one of the biggest things for me, I think, was to learn to trust the Lord totally, unconditionally. So we did a number of things. We started looking for some help. We went to Edith Whitmer, patterning type of exercises. Many of you might have heard some of those programs. They said the right and the left side has to be, you know, which side is dominant. Patterning to get that established and all this and that. So we did that. We were really faithful with that for, I don't know, it was 2-3 years, and just didn't really seem like we were getting the results that we wanted to see. And so we kind of went on to the next step. We did NACD. I don't know if any of you heard of that, National Association for Child Development. We've heard of, had talked with some other friends that had used that. Basically what they do is they give you some tips on just basic child rearing, and also in helping strengthen their, I think what they'd say, the logical part of the brain. Like number repetition. I give you a sequence of numbers and you're supposed to repeat that back, and then you increase that, I give you 5 or 6 numbers in a row and fairly slow, and you say it back to me. And we'd keep doing that. After a bit, it's like an exercise, you know, they you know, didn't like to do that. But we tried to keep it going, keep them excited about it, and they actually became really good at that. And I think it probably helped. But another thing about consequences, you know how it is. No punishments allowed for foster children. So what are you going to do? I mean, you have to get children to cooperate. They're going to have to obey, right? You're not just bringing them in here to have chaos in your home. So we tried this and we tried that. And, put pressure on. We'd give them vinegar for bad words or any. Started doing that for punishments as a whole because there was no abuse with giving them a sip of vinegar. No signs of abuse or anything. But we had to do something to get the point across. So NACD suggested get a pile of bricks and have it at one post and have them move it up the hill. You know, just something pointless so that they can connect that whatever their bad behavior ends in that kind of a consequence. We did that. It's like, finally come to the point, you know what? We have animals, these cows, they get up to the shocking fence, they touch it. Well, you know what a cow does, they get back. They soon learn to fence shock. I said, it only takes one time. I said, why don't these boys don't learn? Like a shock fence. One of our boys said, shall I touch it? If I'd be outside working close to the fence, shall I touch it? Well, do you want to touch it? Go ahead, you know. But that shows you that there's some kind of emotional problem. Okay, so finally I just ignored him. I kept ignoring him. And I'm not sure. It almost seems to me I did one time grab him, wanted to take him up to it. And, no, you don't want to touch it. But, you know, we knew that we had some issues to deal with that the Bible didn't address. At least I didn't know where, like in child training. And so on. So Nancy Thomas wrote a book, When Love Is Not Enough. I don't know if any of you have seen that. We had picked that up and we read that and explained a lot of things. And she works with what they call RAD, Reactive Attachment Disorder. And if any of you were here last year, there was, whatever her name was, Ann was here, and she spoke about that. She was a survivor of that. So that gives us some real encouragement. And being here today and hearing Joey's story and seeing from her perspective, it gives us hope that there is hope, you know. And I think of the verse where Jesus said, "Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, ye have done it unto me." We need to remind ourselves of verses like that in the times when it's hard, when they say, no, Dad, I'm not going to. I want you to go get dressed for bed. No, Dad, I'm not going to. On and on, you know. Or they get into fights with each other. You try to straighten them out. You know, on and on. I'm sure you all know about it. So, this book, she had the dog looked up at his master and said, "You feed me, you love me, you pet me, you take care of me, you clean up after me. You must be God." The cat looks up at its master and says, "You feed me, you love me, you care for me, you clean up after me. I must be God." So she says, this book is dedicated for you parents that have children, have cats with claws. So it's been very helpful. And I'd just like to share some of the points that we got out of her. And then years into that, we went to a family bonding camp where they did what Nancy Thomas says. It's their, her, she's not an Anabaptist. She's, I don't know what she is, but she's just a lady that has worked with children. And she has had some severe issues and severe cases. So this family bonding camp that we've had was like, one of the main things is you get the child into a structure. And being that we were at Teen Boys Ranch, I was like, well, you have the honeymoon period. They can be, you know, pretty good. They can behave good for a while. And it takes a while until their real issues start coming out. So I'm like, how are they going to get these boys to get their issues to come out, to surface in about a week's amount of time? But it was the structure that did it, the structure. They had very close structure. These children were supposed to be within 6 foot of us all the time. They were not supposed to run ahead of us. They would have to say, excuse me, Mom, excuse me, Dad, when they would approach us. And any time, anything that they sidestepped that, we would get the child and they'd do what they call a flight check. So we'd say, what happened? What did you do? What did you misbehave? And so they process the child. So basically, one of the key concepts here is stability and structure for the child. And I guess that's one thing that we should have known back in the early days. I don't feel like we were super unstructured or anything, but we just, you know, yeah, you can handle a 2-3-year-old child. You know, you can take care of them. You can hold them tight until they calm down or whatever. But time goes on, and you need to teach them obedience. And so the structure, if you can bring that structure into your home, just absolute structure. The more structure you can have, the better you are. Like for them to say, yes, Mom, or excuse me, Mom, excuse me, Dad, when they want to approach you, instead of, hey, Mom, Dad, whatever, you know. I need a drink, all that. So that emotional, that structure is very important. One thing that I've read somewhere is that the emotional makeup of a child is largely made up in the first 3 years of its life, the emotional stability of a child. And so you feel like you're working with children that have went through trauma, that have been yanked back and forth. You had foster. They went back to their foster mom for visits, their biological mom, and back to us, back and forth. And they would just tear the children up. They'd be tore up, and you couldn't hardly do anything with them. And so we'd have to hold them tight. We'd have to calm them down, and by the next week, they were back in under our care, in under our structure, fairly calm, and you go for another visit. And same thing over again. And then they talk about stepping up the visits. And it's like, finally, we were like, look, something has to change here. We just about can't do this anymore. But the structure is what that child needs. And to be yanking them back and forth and here and there is like just working opposite. It's trauma for the children. And I remember one of the boys, and the social workers had told us that we don't actually have to force the children to go with the driver for the visits. We can just stay back, stay out of the way. We had drivers would come and pick them up. So we did that one time, and they weren't going to go. They didn't want to go. They did not want to go. And so one of them went hid behind the couch or whatever, and the driver come in. It's like, you know, buddy, come on, it's time to go. And the child looks at us, and we're like, well, we didn't one way or the other, really. Finally, got him coaxed in the vehicle, you know, and took off. But that was trauma for the boy. He still remembers that. Why didn't you keep me safe when he was going for a visit? He did not want that. So, another thing about just that we've learned is the structure that we try to have in our home. Time to get up in the morning and you sit quiet for a while, or we have one of them do chores and the other one has to either help in the house or sit quiet. One of the things that these children almost can't do is hold perfectly still. And that was one of the things they did at this camp, was they had exercises to where they'd get the child to transition from the flight mode into the logical part of the brain. And we found that to be very helpful. When you're telling a child that he can't ride his bike this afternoon because he's misbehaving, well, all he hears is that he can't ride his bike, and this is awful, this is terrible. He doesn't make the connection. He's in that flight, freeze mode, whatever. So you take time, bring him down. What they did is sit him down, a strong sit. Cross your legs, cross your arms, hold perfectly still, and stare at an object in front of you. Well, these children just can't do that. And so they just, sure, it's fine. We'll just wait here until you're strong enough to do it. We got all day. We're not going to hurt you. We're not going to coax you. We're not going to do nothing. You put the weight on the child. You have to get the child to want to. And so eventually that child realizes, my life stopped. I'm stuck right here until I do what they say. So then he'd try to sit still, and after a bit, he'd be squirming, or he'd be looking over here. Okay, we'll start over. 20 seconds. Just 20 seconds. You sit here for 20 seconds. It's not long, but they... So when they finally accomplished it, that means that they were able to force themselves to do that. And that forces their brain into the logical part of their actually to the front part of the brain, I think. Front rather than the back side of your brain. And now you can see a noticeable difference in this child. This child relaxes and shoulders come down and he looks compliant. He's happy. So now he's ready to receive love. Get the child up and you hug him tight. Say, good job. What happened? Get him to acknowledge the wrong that he did. And he'll have to look up at you and say what he did wrong. They always know. If they don't want to say, we'll give you time to think about it. And then is when they're in that logical part of the brain, is when they're ready to receive love. Then you give them a hug. Oh, good job. Give them a hug, pat them on the back, just words of affirmation. Then, like, how are you going to make it right? So, you know, we've done that. Those are all tools. They're helpful, but the fact of the matter is they're still not a simple fix for every problem. It's not one size fits all. It's all different experiences, different children, different... You might have ADHD on top of everything else that you have. School... It's very helpful if you have a school that is willing to work with you. And we've been very blessed with that. We've had some older singles that have taught, and she learned as well that she said, Torrin, you're going to be my boy for today. Set him up by her desk in school, and you're going to be right here. Because he's just there. He's making chaos. He can disrupt the whole classroom, basically. The whole classroom can't do their lessons. And he's just a different boy. She's got him right here. This is what he's going to do. He's going to do exactly what she says. He's going to go where she goes. So, and he just turned him around. But, you know, you can't just live that way in church. This boy would be all over the place. He can't hold still, and he'd be looking around, and he'd be, you know, whatever, with his neighbor. And I put my arm around him, try to hold him in, and... he'd elbow me and he would push me away, and I'd just keep holding there, and we'd sing, and I'd keep holding him tight. And I soon learned that the tighter you hold him, the longer you hold him, the more safe he is, even though he hates you for it. Give it 5 or 10 minutes, after a while, he's snuggling up into me. He's like, you know, he wants to sit against me. He wants to be right up against me. I would just have my arm around him. I'd rub his shoulder, or tweak his ear, or something like that. You know, he'd finally calm down. And then he was wanting to snuggle into me. So I knew that structure, this is what the child needs. In school, how to get this child to do his lessons. If a child is in flight in freeze mode, survival mode. To do math in school, you need your logical part of your brain, right? And so these children, I suppose all of yours that have those issues struggle with math in school. Ours have really struggled with math. It's like, well, how do you teach them math? Well, we've got calculators today, right? Just use a calculator. So, you know, you work with a teacher, get them to do jumping jacks or something, get them to do jumping exercises, run around the church house, just work off some of that energy and help them just get their mind triggered, get them switched, and that helps. Also, one thing very important is praise and affirmation for a job well done. They do a job, or if they brush their teeth extra clean this time, just, oh, wow, your teeth are so bright, I almost fall over. It's like, you know, make a big fuss about it that their teeth are actually clean. And if the teeth are dirty, then just go brush your teeth. So whatever you make the biggest radical fuss about, that's what they're going to try to repeat. So they want that. Something else I wrote down, Q-tip it. That's one thing that we learned from foster training, Q-tip it. Quit taking it personally. You know, you've all had those times where they know the triggers that sets you off. They know what mom and dad, what it takes to get them upset when you're rushed. They know when you're rushed. You're trying to get out the door to go somewhere, and that's the time to trigger. So just, you know, be aware, be patient, don't punish, don't give them consequences when you're frustrated, when you're upset. And I know I have. We've failed with that as much as anybody. But I know, especially when they were younger, they would look up into your eyes. They're reading you, like, how's dad feel? How's mom feel? They can read your eyes. They know what's in your eyes. Things like, back to the structure, the food they eat. A child that's sick emotionally is not even strong enough to make the choice on what food he wants to eat, if he wants dessert or doesn't want dessert. The mom gives him nourishing food, what's good for it. Here's what you're expected to eat. We want you to eat that. If you don't get dessert, just, you know, he doesn't get dessert. Or if he does get dessert, give it to him and expect him to eat. If he doesn't want it, just let it sit. Let him, if he doesn't want it, then put it away. Choices like what clothes to wear, anything. No, don't give the child a choice. They're not strong enough. They cannot make that choice. They need, you bring them into that structure. And what Nancy Thomas says is bonding with the primary caregiver is one of the main goals with this, a child that's been through trauma. They have not learned to trust. And if they haven't learned to trust their primary caregivers, they haven't learned to trust their parents, later in life, they're going to have a hard time trusting the Lord when it comes to giving their hearts to the Lord. So, create the structure. Mom gives them their food. Everything comes from mom because she is the one that is going to care for them. You do for a 6-year-old, 8-year-old, whatever, what you do for an infant because they haven't learned that. They have not bonded with the mother at that young age. The mother, when she has an infant, she's rocking, she nurses the child. The father, when he's rocking, holding, looking into your eyes, talking to the baby, that's bonding, all that. We take that for granted. We take that for granted. The child that hasn't had that, they've had trauma, and it just destroys that. It seems like years, it takes years to rebuild that. It's like, well, oh, you know, why can't, surely they'd learn, but it takes years. It takes years and it takes effort. So I just wanted to read several verses that were very special to us. Pray over your children. Read scripture with your children. We would often pray with our children. When you tuck them into bed, put them to bed on a positive note. Ask them, what was the best thing of your day today? What was special about today? That's bonding, and that helps them to think about, you know, what was good about their day. What's going to be special about your day tomorrow? And help them learn to transition into being able to think for themselves. So verses that were very special to us. Sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud. Thou that didst not travail with child, for more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth a curtain of thine habitation. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame. For thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. For thy Maker is thine husband. The Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth, shall he be called. I'm like, look, we got the resources of the God of the whole earth. He's the one that made the universe. He's got an answer for everything. Cry out to the Lord. Plead. There is help available. We found lots of help. We're still in the journey. Very much in the journey. One thing very, very important is keep your own life in order. No sin in your life at all. Don't allow any sin, any unforgiveness, any bitterness, any wrong thoughts, anything. You have that in your life, you're opening the door to Satan. You're giving access to Satan into your home. Keep your home a haven. Keep your home clean. Keep your home happy. Keep it. Take time for each other. And one thing that this family bonding camp does is they require, at this time they didn't when we went, they require you to have somebody that can provide respite. We were like, oh, you know, we didn't really need respite that bad. We were doing this for how many years, and we've always been able to do this. But we didn't understand it. What they do is respite. You have a trained personnel that went through the same training that we did at the camp, and they take the child and bring them right back under that rigid structure to where they have to be right close, so they have certain chores to do. They have to say, excuse me, miss, and so on. Everything that they want to do. They want to go to the bathroom, they want to drink, anything. It just has to be that tight structure. And that child feels safe. What you're doing is creating a safe place for that child to be vulnerable, to open his heart to you. And once that child is open, that heart, then he's ready to receive love. You're ready to hold him in. I didn't finish the rest of the story after, or in the adoption. I wanted to go through that a little bit. When 3 years were up, they said that the door's open to adopt. You can adopt these children. So we invited our friends and church and different ones to the courthouse, said, come and support us. And we had a good full courthouse when we adopted the boys. It was very, very much of a blessing. And I had told the judge, he said, could we have a prayer? We'd like to ask the Lord's blessing over this adoption. And she said, you may. You can do that. So whenever they opened the session to adopt them, the adoption session, she opened it up, and I had asked my cousin to lead in prayer. That's what he did. And she said that she never saw such an overflowing amount of support for somebody adopting. She thought it was great. It took her 3 years to see that this is what needed to happen for these boys. They come from a home that the mom was left by herself too much, in and out with men, you know, and the oldest has a different father, but the other two have the same father, and he has children with how many other women. So he at one point was wanting to take the children, said that they were going to cohabit, to co-parent. You all know that this is ridiculous. He had how many children already? So the court, I mean, it fell through. Then we adopted. Well, a year after the adoption, my wife gave birth to twins. We had a boy and a girl. 3 years after that, she gave birth to twin boys. So we have our hands full. We have seven. So I used to tell people I would have never imagined this. I would have never dreamed that, you know, the day's coming when we have our hands so full. So what I just read, Sing, O Barren, where the more is the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife. So the Lord has ways of bringing us to Him and drawing us close, and we're very much in the journey yet. I sometimes feel like there's hope, but other times we feel like, what are these boys going to turn out to be? So we just keep on and do the best we can, keep showing them love. I think that we've heard a lot of good this weekend already about just communication, love, and keeping that love flowing. And another thing to remember, the times of the heat is like, it's not you against the child. Remind yourself that this child, look at the history of this child. And so we have both sides. We have adopted and we have biological. And it makes your heart hurt for what these children missed. There's a world of difference in our own children as far as learning. They didn't have that trauma. They didn't have that, it might be drugs, you know, leftover, whatever, fetal alcohol syndrome, I don't know. I came to the point where I think the world has done pretty good, our society has done pretty good at diagnosing. We give a diagnosis and we give it a name, but I'm more interested in a cure, in a practical, something that's going to work to help this child. So, just want to bless you all and wish that the Lord would give you all abundant strength and what you need for where you're at.